You're listening to an audio resource from Vineyard Church of the Rockies in Fort Collins, Colorado. We are joining God's mission, transforming all things, and you're invited. To learn more about us and how you can connect, please visit votr.church.
Good morning, Vineyard Church. Thank you so much for inviting us into your home. We are grateful to be worshiping with you this morning, gathered together in this own creative way. And so thankful for all that God has done, is doing, and will continue to do in our church. As you can see, the setup is very festive. I'm curious, you know, to know, maybe you can mention something in the chat. We can just all type in our own answer here. But exactly how long can you keep decorations up after the holidays? I mean, every family is a little bit different. I'm sure there are some that are taking decorations down soon or have already taken some down. The Faust family, we will probably leave them up for way too long because that's just the reality of the house we live in. But yeah, mention something in the chat about how long you leave your decorations up. We'd love to just hear from you this morning. You know, this is the time of year, though, kind of between Christmas and New Year's, or really for anyone with kids, the start of school again, where time seems to just stop. I mean, I know it's a Sunday, but I don't know what the date is. I have no idea like what's happening in my life. I just have to make sure that I feed my kids and everyone is healthy and alive. I'm just kind of counting down the days to when school begins. But this is also the time of year where we start to reflect on the previous year, you know, all of 2025. What did God do in our lives? What did he do in our midst? And it's the time of year where we begin to think forward and we dream and we plan about the future. It's kind of cracked me up in the last few years because forever, like the new thing, it was all about New Year's resolutions. And so everybody was making New Year's resolutions. And then this trend came along where it was, no, we're not making New Year's resolutions. That's so old. Those things don't work anyway. I'm just getting a word for the year. And then you talk to those. So you might have a word. You might have a word right now that God's laid on your heart. But guess what? It's just a New Year's resolution. That's all it is. It's just rebranded and remarketed as a New Year's. One of the words that I heard all the time last year was Sabbath. Sabbath is the word of the year. I am going to learn how to rest. You know, in New Year's resolution terms, we just call that, I'm going to do a better job of Sabbathing this year. That's all it is. So whether you have a word or whether you have a New Year's resolution, this is the time of year where you can kind of hit reset on a few different things. You can try to establish some new habits and really kind of reinvigorate your life, maybe with God, with your loved ones, whatever it is. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that this morning as well, because as we look at 2026, at least from a church perspective, I think this is going to be a really powerful year. I think it's going to be a really big year for us. Obviously, Love Foco is going to open in 2026, which will have a way of kind of reorienting the way that we do mission and outreach. Very excited about that. Tons of volunteer opportunities as well. But 2026 is going to be a really important year. And so I was thinking and praying about what I would share with you this morning. I really was thinking about that as well as the series we've been in the entire month of December around this 2x2 idea, how we can take complex and sometimes challenging things to understand and we can simplify it by using a 2x2 grid. So what we're going to talk about this morning is really what is our calling and how do we express that calling in our lives and the world around us. You know, are we supposed to be inwardly focused? Are we supposed to be deeply connected to God and grow this kind of inward connection with God? Or are we supposed to be outward focused and reaching the lost and serving the poor and having an outward focus? Are we supposed to be inward or outward? Are we supposed to be loving God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, or loving others as ourselves? And of course, the right answer, the biblical answer, is we're supposed to be doing both of those things. We're supposed to be doing both of those things with all of our lives, and we're supposed to do it over and over and over again. Of course, no one did this like Jesus. He's the perfect example in all of the things that we talk about, but he's the perfect example of this inward and outward dynamic, the way he expressed his connection with God as well. You know, you look at the Gospels and you study the life and the teachings of Jesus. It seemed like he was always living in this rhythm, right? Of retreating in the mountains to be alone or staying up all night long in solitude and in prayer and then coming back off the mountain and healing the sick and casting out demons and preaching about the kingdom of God. And he was retreating and going and retreating and going. He was on this mission all of the time, and we want to model our lives after his. So we're gonna just open the scriptures briefly together this morning. I'm in Mark chapter 6. If you've never read the Gospel of Mark, it's an incredible gospel. One of the reasons why I love Mark is that it's so action-packed. He's just sharing one story after another, and about half of it's dedicated to the last week of Jesus's life as well. But we're gonna be in Mark 6 this morning. And I chose Mark 6 because in this chapter, you see this rhythm, this inward and outward, this depth of connection with his Father in heaven, and this outward reach to the world around him in so many perfect ways. I'm just gonna read a couple of passages for you this morning, but first a little context. Here's what's happening in Mark 6. Jesus gathered his 12 disciples together, he prayed for them, and then he sent them out to kind of do almost an itinerant ministry. They were sent out as local missionaries to different towns, and he prayed for them, and they were supposed to preach and announce the kingdom and pray for the sick and do all the things they had been watching Jesus do. While they're out going and doing that, John the Baptist was actually killed. And so you see Jesus beginning to retreat. You see a very human side of Jesus where he wants to kind of get away, almost like he's going to mourn the death of his cousin. It's in that midst that his disciples come back from the ministry trip. And then look here at verse 30, Mark 6, verse 30. This is what it says. The apostles returned to Jesus from their ministry tour and told him all they had done and taught. Then Jesus said, "Let's go off by ourselves to a quiet place and rest a while." He said this because there were so many people coming and going that Jesus and his apostles didn't even have time to eat. Man, I have never felt more like a disciple than when I skip lunch, when there's just so many busy things happening that I forget to eat lunch. That's what's happening. There's so many people coming and going. There's so many things on their plate. They don't even have enough time to eat. And Jesus says, after this ministry trip and the fact that there's people and there's needs all around us, now is actually the time to retreat, go alone, get alone, be with ourselves, take a time of rest. This is so important for us to understand and see in the Gospels, because I think in our humanness, when there's this much hustle, this much bustle, this much ministry activity going on, that's when we kind of double down and we say, no, I've got a little bit more energy. I've got one more day in me. But that's not the model of Jesus. It's in those moments where he actually says, come away. Let's go to a secluded place and let's have a time of rest. And so that's what they do. They get on a boat, they go to the other side of the lake. They're going to have a time of rest. But look at what happens here. Now, just moving forward a few verses into verse 34, because a crowd is starting to appear right when they land after they tried to get away. And this is what it says in Mark 6, 34. Jesus saw the huge crowd as he had stepped from the boat, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. So you start with sending the 12 out. There's ministry happening. All kinds of incredible things are taking place. They get back and they retreat. They go to a secluded place. Now, this was a short-lived retreat. It was about the length of that boat ride, maybe a day or a night long is all. And by the time they get finished, there's people all around. Jesus has compassion on them. And he's going back into ministry mode. Now he is going to teach, and he's going to administer the kingdom in that place. This is the passage where they end up feeding the 5,000 people, that miraculous moment on the hillside where the bread and the fish just continues to be multiplied. An incredible ministry moment. And then after the feeding of the 5,000, look what it says in verse 45, still in chapter 6. Immediately after this, Jesus insisted, I think that's a powerful word for us. Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and head across the lake to Bethsaida while he sent the people home. Verse 46, after telling everyone goodbye, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. And as you continue to read Mark 6, you realize he stayed there almost all night long, praying on the mountainside, recharging his batteries for sure, but also just spending time with his Father in heaven, working on that inward connection. And so Mark 6 is a great picture of what we're talking about, you know, with this inward life with God that kind of propels you outward to do ministry, that makes you retreat to recharge your batteries and be reconnected with the Lord in a powerful way. We see this over and over and over again in the life of Jesus. And if I'm right about 2026 and that it's going to be a big year for our church and it's going to be a big year for all of us as we share in this space together, then I think this is something that we have to especially pay attention to, because the demands of ministry are only going to increase. And at the same time, we want to be fueled and charged so that we can minister to all those folks around us. And so this is kind of what I'm talking about when we think about the 2x2 this morning, when we think about kind of the way we've been moving through December together. How can we talk about this in a simple 2x2 grid? So we can just draw it up this morning. Here's how the first slide would look. If you had inward on one axis and outward on the other axis, the up and down, that Y axis, that would be kind of inward depth, right? And so the greater depth, you're gonna be moving up on that. And the X axis, the right to left, the further you move to the right, the more outward, the more reach you would have, or maybe mission and outreach opportunity. And so the way that this begins to play out when you think about, you know, full depth and full outreach versus full depth, no outreach, and so on and so forth, as you just work your way around the 2x2, this is how it would look. Obviously, the upper right, that's where you want to be. That's where spiritual maturity is found. Spiritual maturity where you're both living deeply connected to God and your life is almost spilling out onto the world around you. You are a light that is not being hidden. You are shining brightly for the world around you. Now, the upper left, if you had tons of depth and you have no outreach, no mission, you're just living kind of your own faith-filled life, you can jot this in if you're making these notes yourself. That's what I would call a navel-gazing hermit, right? You're just secluded. You're living your own life. You're just doing whatever you want to do. It's just me and Jesus. We're praying for a revival. You know what? Forget everybody else. Let's just go to the mountains again. I'm just going to memorize some scripture. I'm just going to sing kumbayas. Just me and the Lord all by ourselves. You are going to be in danger of becoming a navel-gazing hermit. But you know, the lower right isn't as helpful either. We don't want to knee-jerk the other way, because in the lower right-hand corner, all outreach, no depth, no connection to our Father in heaven, you are in danger of being a burned-out missionary. That's just the reality. You're not going to be nearly as effective as you think you are going to be, and you have the potential of just being burned out, just crispy, a crispy minister in the name of the Lord. That light will begin to fade because you're not plugged into anything. And eventually, the power of the Lord will just begin to fizzle. And of course, the lower left, no one wants to be there. You're kind of have like an aimless, almost a wandering life. There's not gonna be a lot of purpose behind the way that you're living, and you're not gonna be deeply connected to the Father. So we wanna avoid that at all costs, of course. We wanna be moving up and to the right as often as we can. You know, I mean, the reality is, without an inward depth and an outward focus working together, you will lack in spiritual formation. It's just the truth. Like, without both of those things working together in your life with God and as a follower of Christ, you will lack spiritual formation. Without outward, you will suffer. You really will. You'll have a selfish faith. You'll never face your fears. You won't even know what to go to God. I mean, imagine this. Imagine a life where you never share your faith. You never pray for your neighbor. You never invite a classmate to Youth Alpha or to get connected at church. You won't know the insecurities in your own heart that the Lord needs to minister to, because part of the way we're formed is by stepping out in faith and becoming aware of our own shortcomings and inviting the Lord to minister to those places. At the same time, without the inward, you will also suffer. You'll be ineffective. You may have a shallow faith. And again, I mean you will really begin to falter in some of the ways that you reach out to those around you, because you're not being continually filled in the presence of the Lord. I've come to learn over the years of pastoring that it's actually one of the most common lies that Christians kind of entertain. Not only is that we have to be one or the other, but another common lie is to think, I'm gonna focus all on the inward, and then eventually, kind of when I'm like mature enough and maybe there's enough power of God in my life and I've kind of cleaned up some things, then I'll move to the outward. I'll do all the inward first, and then I'll do the, but listen, this never works. This never works because one, when are you ever going to have enough power? You don't, that's not the gig anyway. We don't have the power. We are vessels of the Lord's power. So don't focus on just living the inward life until some magic time where you arrive and then you can be outwardly focused. Now do both at the same time. Besides, when you read the scriptures, honestly, when you look at the life of the disciples, they were doing inward and outward well before they were ready for either of them. They just went out. It was almost a blind faith. They're just following Jesus and he's correcting them along the way and he's telling them, no, you gotta retreat. No, you gotta go on a missions trip. We gotta do all these things. So be like the disciples. Just start going with both of these things and trust that the Lord is at work in your life. It's just true. The most spiritually mature and the most spiritually formed people that I know have both of these things alive and active in their life. They're inward and they're outward. They have a radical commitment to growth. So I just find myself wanting to ask you, church, this morning, how do you think you need to grow? Now, obviously the answer for all of us is probably both. We need to like up and to the right. We need all of it. I need more inward. I need more outreach. Of course, that's true. But where do you tend to lean? Where do you tend to lean? And maybe it's, you know, different in different seasons. I know I've done them all. I've been a burned out missionary before. And I've done the kumbaya in the mountains, just me and Jesus. Let's just sit in the prayer room for 24 hours a day and just do my own. Like, where are you leaning right now? And in 2026, how is God inviting you to grow? How is he inviting you to step out in faith, inwardly, outwardly, over and over and over again? We have some next steps that I think will help you on the journey, something that we do as a church every January together. It's called Holy Hustle. And I just wanna put this on your plate again because I would love for you to get connected, to sign up for Holy Hustle, to be engaged with what we're doing. You know, 1 Timothy 4:8 is how Holy Hustle was inspired in the first place. It says, physical training is good, but training for godliness is much better, promising benefits in this life and in the life to come. 1 Timothy 4:8. And so every January as a church, we invite everybody to participate in Holy Hustle. And if you look at the list of things we're doing and you're like, man, I can't do all that stuff, don't worry. It's better to do a little bit than do nothing at all. And so jump in with Holy Hustle, do what you can, and trust that as you step out in faith, the Lord is maturing you and forming you in this inward place and this outward place together. Here's what we're encouraging you to do with Holy Hustle. First, we always encourage everyone to read all four Gospels in the month of January. The reason we do that is because we wanna start with the Gospels. The rest of the Bible will make sense if you know the person of Jesus. And bonus, it takes about 2 or 3 chapters of reading a day to read all four Gospels in the month of January. And that is a great rhythm that you can carry on for the rest of the year. Because if you read about 2 or 3 chapters a day, you'll read almost the entire Bible every single year. So that's a great discipline to include in your life. Reading all four Gospels in January, that's where we're gonna start. And then we have a variety of spiritual disciplines that we wanna encourage you to jump in on. If you follow the link and you go to the Holy Hustle webpage that we've created, you'll see all kinds of spiritual disciplines. I wanna highlight 3 in particular. I wanna highlight fasting, which after the holiday season, we could probably all use a little bit of that anyway. But something unique happens to the human heart when we embrace weakness. When we actually go without, it kind of awakens our heart to a spiritual hunger that we might not otherwise and see. And so, you know, you have to listen to your body. You got to listen to your doctors. Some of us fasting is a lot harder than others, but I want to encourage everyone who signs up to fast in one way or another in the month of January. We have corporate prayer right here at the church on Tuesday nights. We want to encourage you to sign up for that. Come, we're gonna have different themes each week, and we are gonna be contending with God for the things that he's inviting us to do. You know, it's just dawned on my heart. We can't spend all this energy fundraising and telling people about Love Fogo with all also praying to God that he would come and move with his spirit among us. And so we wanna pray every Tuesday night in a corporate gathering. And then we have a book. Every year we pick a book and we encourage the whole church to read that book together. This year I'm really excited about the book that we've picked. It's called Reviving Mission. I would love for you to go out and get this book. If you need help buying this book, we'll help you get a copy of it. But Reviving Mission will help kind of thrust you in to the world around you. It will really send you out, calling each and every one of us as a missionary. But it will call you as a missionary with first encountering God and learning to walk with him daily, seeking him, seeking what he is doing in the world around you. And so Reviving Mission, it's going to be a great book. I think our church will read together. Very excited about it. And bonus, the author and I go way back. John Heatbrink, who helped write this book, was the first person who ever discipled me after I gave my life to Christ and I was just a crazy young adult in college. He put his arm around me and met with me week after week after week for a number of years. I'm so grateful to John. And he was kind enough to make a video for us this morning to encourage our church to step into Holy Hustle and to take this work seriously, reviving the missionary in each and every one of us. So let's watch that video together. And then I'll lead us into a time of reflection and response.
What is up, Vineyard Church of the Rockies? So my name is John Heatbrink, and I am one of the co-authors of Reviving Mission, Awakening to the Everyday Movement of God. And when Jeff told me that you all were going to be engaging with the book as part of Holy Hustle, I was so pumped for a couple reasons. So first, I love Jeff and Natalie. So I've known them since they were students of mine back in college here in Iowa with InterVarsity, and I am just huge fans of theirs. I love their heart, I love their vision and their joy. And second, I love the Vineyard Network. You all have been such generous, generous partners for our work with InterVarsity, and we have learned so much from you all about what it means to walk with the Holy Spirit in naturally supernatural ways where everybody can play, amen? And that means, and it's such an honor to try and be able to share some of what we've learned with you all. I hope that the book resonates with you all in a deep way as you seek to live lives of everyday mission right there in Fort Collins, and that it helps you encounter the joy of Jesus' reviving mission in a new way.
I'm so grateful for John and the way he's invested in my life, and so grateful for the way that that book will invest in our church as well. You know, this whole idea of inward and outward, as we prepare to kind of take a moment of reflection and response, which we're merging together during this time together, I just want to finish by reading a poem, actually. And I, you know, count the times on your one hand that I've finished anything with reading a poem, but this poem has meant so much to me, and I think it really captures the idea of having a deep connection with the Lord that does compel you to be outward focused. It's called I Stand at the Door, and it's by Sam Shoemaker. We have a link that we can share with you so you can read the whole poem. I'm only gonna read about a minute, minute and a half of it this morning. It's a longer poem, and so I just picked a few paragraphs that I wanna read. But this is how it begins. It says, I stand by the door. I neither go too far in nor stay too far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It is the door through which men walk when they find God. There is no use my going way inside and staying there when so many are still outside, and they, as much as I, crave to know where the door is. And all that so many ever find is only the wall where the door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men with outstretched, groping hands, feeling for a door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it. So I stand by the door. The most tremendous thing in the world is for men to find that door, the door to God. The most important thing that any man can do is to take hold of one of those blind, groping hands and put it on the latch that only clicks and opens to the man's own touch. Men die outside the door as starving beggars die on cold nights in cruel cities in the dead of winter, die for want of what is within their grasp. They live on the other side of it, live because they have not found it. Nothing else matters compared to helping them find it and open it and walk in it and find him. So I stand at the door. I admire the people who go way in, but I wish they would not forget how it was before they got in. Then they would be able to help the people who have not yet found the door. or the people who want to run away from God again. You can go in too deeply and stay too long and forget the people outside the door. As for me, I shall take my own old accustomed place near enough to hear God and know he is there, but not so far from men as to not hear them and remember that they are there too. Where? Outside the door. Thousands of them, millions of them, but more important for me, one of them, two of them, 10 of them, whose hands I am intended to put on the latch. So I shall stand by the door and wait for those who seek it. I had rather be a doorkeeper, so I stand by the door. This is a wonderful poem. And I love the phrase where it says, I never want to forget the voice of the men and women around me who are searching, but I want to be so close to God that I can hear his voice. It's living in this tension, so close, so connected to the Lord that we never forget or miss his voice, but also an eye on the world around us so that we can hear the voices of those searching as well. Let's take a moment to pray and respond together.